The following is a lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 8, text number 16, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on September 22nd, 2011, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Abrahma Bhuvanat Loka Puna Avartina Arjuna Mam Upetya Tu Konteya Puna Janma Na Vidyate Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartinarjuna Mamupecha tu konteya Punar janmana vidyate Abrahma bhuvana loka Punar avartinarjuna Mamupecha tu konteya Punar janmana vidyate Abrahma bhuvanat Up to the Brahma loka planet Loka The planetary systems Puna Again Avartina Returning Arjuna O Arjuna, Mam, unto me, Upetya, arriving, Te, but, Konteya, O son of Kunti, Puna Janma, rebirth, Na, never, Vidyate, takes place. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Purport. All kinds of yogis, karma, jnana, hatha, etc., eventually have to attain devotional perfection in bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness before they can go to Krishna's transcendental abode and never return. Those who attain the highest material planets, the planets of the demigods, are again subjected to repeated birth and death. As persons on earth are elevated to higher planets, people on higher planets, such as Brahmalok, Chandralok, and Indralok, fall down to earth. The practice of sacrifice called Panchagni Vidya, recommended in the Chandyoga Upanishad, enables one to achieve Brahmaloka. But if on Brahmaloka one does not cultivate Krishna consciousness, then he must return to earth. Those who progress in Krishna consciousness on the higher planets are gradually elevated to higher and higher planets, and at the time of universal devastation are transferred to the eternal spiritual kingdom. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary in the Bhagavad Gita, quotes this verse, Brahmana sahate sarve samprapte prati sanchare parashante kritatmana pravishanti parampadam. when there is devastation of this material universe, Brahma and his devotees, who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness, are all transferred to the spiritual universe and to specific spiritual planets according to their desires.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatha Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganitam Ditam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha.
So this kind of puts an end to all of our dreams, doesn't it, of enjoying this material world. If we had any idea we could enjoy here, well, Krishna just smashed it. We were thinking we can get ahead in this material, on this earth planet, and be happy, become a rock star, a multimillionaire, or something. We thought we could make it here and become happy. But even on the higher planets, you can't be happy. Even if you go all the way to becoming Brahma, the chief demigod of the entire material universe, you cannot be happy in this place. So, what does it mean? Well, if you can't be happy here, we might as well find out where we can be happy, isn't it? I mean, no matter what I do to get ahead in this material world, there's no way I can really find that happiness I desire in this place. You think they make me prime minister? You think they make me, you know, even if I can make a phone better than the iPhone and become more wealthy and famous than Steve Jobs, still, see, I can't make it here to be happy. So it's good, actually, that Krishna has popped our little bubble. You know, we had this little bubble thinking we could be really happy here. Somehow or other, you know, I'm going to make it here and be happy. Yeah, I'll just make all my plans for retirement, then I'll retire, and then I'll be happy in my retirement, you see. But actually, you can't do anything to be happy. No matter what you do in this material world, this will still be a miserable place. Sorry. But at the same time, this is the good news, you see. This is the good news, because then Krishna says, Purnarjanmana vidyate, one who attains to my abode, he never has to take birth again in this place. So on the one hand, it seems Krishna is being kind of a little heavy with us, you know, just telling us, forget it, you can't really be happy no matter what you do here. But he's giving us the alternative. He's giving us the positive alternative, how we can really be happy, really relish the nectar. So actually, this Vedic wisdom, the materialists criticize you, Hare Krishna people, you're so negative. I mean, all you talk about is death and misery, and you people aren't very, you don't have a good time, you Hare Krishna, you know. But actually, we have the best good time. Their good time is simply an imitation of the good time that we have, you see. We are singing and dancing the holy names of God. They're singing and dancing wine, women, and song, you see. Their enjoyment is simply a perverted reflection of the enjoyment that we have in Krishna consciousness. This is the real original enjoyment. You see, music was originally meant to glorify God. That's all. Even you look back in the the Renaissance period, that was all devotional music. All these composers, Bach, Beethoven, they were glorifying God, you see. It's like, hallelujah, Handel's Messiah, hallelujah, hallelujah. It's glorifying God, you see. These are the popular hits of the Renaissance period, devotional song, you see. So now it's all this mundane stuff. I want to hold your hand and this kind of garbage, you know. It's popular songs. So the original utilization of all the arts, of all the aspects of culture. Every single aspect of culture was originally meant to be used in glorification of the Lord. Formerly, the architecture was how to build beautiful cathedrals and temples, and now it's how to build dazzling bank buildings, you see. So the culture is so much degraded, you see. Getting further and further away from the real fact that you cannot enjoy in this world the only enjoyment. The only real enjoyment is to reestablish one's lost, loving relationship with that supreme, all-powerful, all-beautiful, all-renounced, all-knowledgeable, all-wealthy, and all-famous, amazing, absolutely amazing, supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who was standing on the bank of the Jamuna at Keshigad with a yellow dhoti, placing his flute to his lips, which seemed like newly blossomed twigs, playing the fifth note on the flute, and attracting all the gopi girls with his beautiful threefold bending form, you see. Actually, that's in the relationship with that supreme person. There we can derive unlimited happiness, unlimited satisfaction. So, all I can say is it's time to get back. Time to get back where we once belong, you see, in association with God. We are not meant to be divorced from God. This material world is an artificial atmosphere. This is divorcee, place of divorcee. This is divorcee loka. Everybody has divorced himself from God. A bunch of divorcees running around like madmen in this place, you see. We're all meant to reestablish that lost connection with the Supreme Lord. That's what we're meant to do. And if you are doing something else with your life besides trying to reconnect with that Supreme Lord, what does the Vedic wisdom say? Shama eva hi kevalam. You're simply uselessly wasting your time. You're uselessly throwing your time down the drain. Would you take your kroners and throw them in the dumpster? No. So why? Your time is more valuable than kroners. Why are you wasting your time then? Not cultivating self-realization, you see. Every minute should be used for realizing the Supreme. Through everything that you do, everything you eat, everything you offer, everything you give away, every thought, every word, every deed, in all times, places, and circumstances, you must use that to reestablish your lost loving relationship with God. Then you're properly living as a human being. Otherwise, you're an animal. Sorry. Otherwise, you're an animal. I have to say the truth. I'm sitting on the Vyasa sana. I'm supposed to represent the teachings of Veda Vyasa. So I have to say the truth, even if it's a little heavy sometimes. I'm sorry if you're offended, but I have to say the truth. It's like a doctor has to tell you, my dear sir, you have cancer. Well, that really upset my day. How you can tell me that, doctor? You're supposed to say, you know, you're doing fine. No, there's a doctor's duty to tell the patient, my dear sir, I hate to inform you of this, but you have cancer, and you must immediately undergo heavy treatment to cure yourself. So, the spiritual master comes with the bad news to tell us, we have cancer. We're suffering from the cancer of thinking that I am this body. It is the cancer known as material consciousness. This is cancer. This is a mental cancer. It's brain cancer. You see, you're suffering from brain cancer. You think that you're the body. You think this is our disease. I'm thinking I'm the body. I'm thinking that my enjoyment is the combination of the senses with the objects of the senses. This is brain cancer. So now we have to know chemotherapy. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. To snap us out of this brain cancer. To bring us back to the reality that you're not that body, sir. You're not that body, ma'am. You're an eternal spiritual being. Why are you identifying with a rotting corpse? Why are you foolishly misidentifying yourself with a rotting corpse? Do you think you can be happy by doing that? Do you think you can be happy by misidentifying with a rotting body? Where the hearing is going bad, the eyes are going bad, the hairs are falling out, they're turning gray, the organs are going bad, your legs are going bad, your joints are going bad. You think you can be happy by identifying with that? Then think again. Let's see. The only way you can really be happy is to reconnect with your eternal, blissful, all-knowing, eternally youthful nature, the spiritual being. That's where you can find true happiness. So the process of Krishna consciousness is the process of bringing us back in contact with our true, original, eternal identity. Just as Narada Muni made the transition, we can make the transition. He was an ordinary little kid. He's the son of a Sudra woman. He had no big qualification, just an ordinary little child. The father was gone, just a mother growing up, a one-parent family. He grew up in a one-parent family with a Sudra woman, just some low-class worker. That's not a high-class family, just a low-class working woman with no husband. He's a little kid growing up with a one-parent family with a working woman. And but he just happened to, it just so happened the sages during the rainy season were set up camp just near his house. And he used to go over there in the woods and listen to their discourses. And he would sometimes take the remnants of their foodstuffs also, which has great power. If you can get the remnants of the foodstuffs of the spiritual master, of the pure devotees, spiritual masters, there is great power there. So he would take the remnants of their food, he would hear their discourses. And in this way, the idea of becoming a transcendentalist, a spiritual person beyond this material existence, that idea became very attractive to him, even though he's a little tiny boy. He became completely enlivened with this idea of becoming a transcendentalist. And then his mother was bit by a snake and he was all alone. He took it as an opportunity and he became a wandering sannyasi. And he actually saw God. He realized God. That was his previous life. Actually, the Bhagavatam talks about three of his lifetimes. Before that, he was a pop singer in the heavenly planets, singing all kinds of love songs to the young heavenly damsels of the spiritual, the heavenly planets. He was a very popular pop singer in the heavenly planets, and he got cursed because he was rather licentious, as pop singers often get. On this planet, even in the heavenly planets, the pop singers get licentious as well. It happened to him. He became a licentious pop singer in the heavenly planets. And he was cursed to become a Sudra boy. But from there, because he got the association of these great saintly personalities, the Bhaktivedantas, as we are getting the Supreme Bhaktivedantas Association, you see. Because he got the association of the Bhaktivedantas, he got that seed of devotional service, that seed of Krishna consciousness planted in his heart. In the next lifetime, he became the great Narada Muni, the liberated spaceman. He doesn't have to fly in on Scandinavian Airlines, you see. He can just come in, doesn't have to go through security or go through immigration. He just shows up. He could just pop right here in the temple room and give the Bhagavad Gita class, you see, without having to worry about a ticket, passport, any of that stuff. He's a liberated spaceman. He can even go to the spiritual world, back and forth between the spiritual and material worlds at will. You can imagine the great position of Narada Muni, the great liberated spaceman. So we can also become liberated spacemen, you see. We can travel anywhere to serve the Lord and to spread His glories, you see. If we will do exactly the same thing that Narada Muni did, which is to hear from the Bhaktivedantas with love, with faith, with devotion, with attention, you see, to fix his mind with full attention on the words coming from the lotus mouths of the Bhaktivedantas. By that fixed attention, tuning in, not that he sat there and he was thinking about what he was going to have for lunch that afternoon. His mind was completely fixed when he heard the Bhaktivedanta speaking, completely riveted on their words, not flying here, flying there like an airplane circling the airport wondering when it's going to land. Completely riveted, you see. So if we can learn how to hear the teachings coming from the Bhaktivedanta, you see, either directly in his lectures or from those who are speaking his words, it's the same potency. If we can learn how to tune into that message coming from the Bhaktivedanta and the little Bhaktivedantas, his followers, you see, then we can achieve the same position of Narada Muni. We can become liberated spacemen, eternal associates of the Lord. So, I can ask now if there's any questions. Lalita Nathprabhu.
You talk about Narada's previous life. I think I once heard that there was even a previous life before this life as Gandhara. Have you heard about that? Or
can you sit closer and amplify the questions for me?
Lalita Nathprabhu, he says that he has heard somewhere that Narada Muni, he had a previous life, even previous to his life as a Gandhara.
I don't remember that verse, but you find it, if you find out, let me know. I don't know.
I only heard it kind of once.
I've just seen that in the, I've never read it in the Bhagavatam. Maybe there's, you know, in the vast Vedic literatures, or maybe, he may be described elsewhere, but in terms of the Bhagavatam, that's all I know. Of course, he had millions. We've all had millions of births. So obviously, he must have had some birth before he was a pop singer in the heavenly planets. And some, you know, we've all had millions and millions of births here in this material existence. That's a thing. So, time to get out. Any other questions? Yeah.
I was thinking about this when we listen and when we read the books of Srila Prabhupada, we can easily understand in our mind that we are not the body.
Mm.
And we accept it while we're sitting and reading it, but then right after reading it, we go out and then immediately we are back in this body consciousness.
Right. So how do we maintain...
Foolish, but how to get rid of this?
Yeah, that's the difference. The question is, you know, we hear that we're not the body, and we sit here and we go, yeah, I'm not the body. As soon as we walk out of the class, immediately some bodily thought enters and we descend to the bodily plane once again. So how to retain Brahman consciousness, or I am the spirit soul consciousness, through all times, places, and situations? Well, the key is, just as while hearing the class, you were fixed in Shastric vision, the key is you have to maintain your Shastric vision 24 hours a day. Stop seeing, of course you will always see through your material eyes as long as you have the material body, but you have to add the corrective lenses of spiritual vision to everything that you're seeing 24 hours a day. You have to supplement what you can see with your material eyes with the corrective lenses of Shastric vision. Always analyze and see everything through the eyes of the scripture. That's the key. That's why we have to read these books as much as possible. Or if you can't read, you know, play some lectures while you're driving. Always, you know, always be seeing through the eyes of these books, this knowledge that Prabhupada is giving us. If you can always keep that transcendental vision, that's the key. Because at the time of death, you want to have transcendental vision that, oh no, now my life is being taken away. You don't want to be thinking that way, because it's not true. That, oh wow, I'm getting promoted. It looks like I'm up for a promotion. You know, if one has lived one's whole life in accordance with the orders of Guru and Krishna, the time of death means, wow, I'm being called for promotion. The higher authorities are calling me now for promotion in my service. So, we just have to train ourselves. And that's why we recommend that everyone should chant at least 16 rounds a day of Hare Krishna Japa Mala attentively. Because that brings your mind back to the transcendental platform. Yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalamashtaram tatastatanyamnyaitad atmanyeva vishangniya. From wherever and wherever your mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. That's specifically for yogis. That verse. It applies to bhaktas, but the bhaktas actually have a higher level way of bringing their mind under control. Do you know what that is? That's described in the Vigdagda Madhava by Rupa Goswami. Tunde tandamani vritin vitanate tundavali lamdiye karna karoda gadamani gatayake kanarbre braspriham cheta prangana sangani vijayate servendriyanam kritim no jane janita kriyadvi amitai krishneti varnadvai. Rupa Goswami very nicely explains. He says this, I do not know how much nectar these two syllables, Krishna, have produced. Because when I vibrate, Krishna is not just my tongue is vibrating a sound. These two syllables are dancing on my tongue, and when they are dancing on my tongue, they are oozing out so much nectar that my one little tongue is not able to capture all of this nectar. So therefore, I am praying that I can have millions of tongues to capture that, at least a little bit more of the nectar. That's. And then when those two syllables, Krishna, enter the holes of my ears, there's so much nectar that I'm praying for millions and trillions, millions, billions, and trillions of years so I can capture that nectar. And when Krishna is dancing in the courtyard of my heart, my mind is completely conquered and I'm stunned in a state of wonder. So, if you want to know how to remain always transfixed in transcendental consciousness, you simply have to learn to taste the name. That's all. You just need some Namaruchi, Prabhu. You just need to come to the stage of Namaruchi, and then you'll never have any problem staying fixed. So how do you get to Namaruchi? Rupa Goswami is also very... Namaruchi means taste for the name. So Rupa Goswami is also very kindly explained how to come to the Namaruchi stage. The first thing is you have to have faith in the process. Shraddha. Adau Shraddha. Adau means in the beginning. Adau Shraddha. Tata. Thereafter, Sadhu Sangha. Then you associate with the saintly devotees of the Lord, the pure devotees who are strictly following the previous acharyas, you see. Adau Shraddha. Tata Sadhu Sangha. Ta Bhajana Kriya. And then after that, Bhajana Kriya. Bhajana means devotional, kriya means activities. So you have to take up the activities of devotional service now. And what are they? You see the sadhus, what the pure devotees of the Lord, what they are doing, and now you do. You give up your bad habits, you chant Hare Krishna, you take initiation. This is all within Bhajana Kriya. It means to follow the regulative principles of devotional service, of the sadhana bhakti, the execution of devotional service according to regulative principles under the order of the spiritual master. That is described as Bhajana Kriya. So now you're getting closer to Namaruchi. You're not there yet. Not there yet. You're getting closer. Then after Bhajana Kriya, the next stage is Anartha Nivritti. On this stage, now you must give up those anarthas even to get initiated, but now you're becoming solidly situated in freedom from the bad habits. You've given up all your bad habits, you see. On the order of your spiritual master, you've given up the bad habits. That's called Anartha Nivritti, and then Nishtha. Then you become fixed up devotee, you see. You're solidly fixed in following the regulated principles of Krishna consciousness, having given up your bad habits. And now once you've done all this, then the taste for the name can begin to manifest within your consciousness. On your tongue it can manifest. Within your ears it can manifest. Namaruchi appears in the tongue, it appears in the ears, and it appears in the heart, as described by Rupa Goswami. So once you actually begin to experience Namaruchi on the tongue, the ears, and in the heart, then when you walk out in the street, you're not bewildered by the material world. When you go out to your job at security at the airport, you're not bewildered by it. Because you're tasting the name. The name is reverberating in your heart the whole day. You've chanted 16 rounds, and then the name is just, the ecstasy of the name is just like reverberating in your heart all day long, 24 hours a day. And then there won't be any, the material nature will lose. Not once you become attracted to Krishna's name, there's nothing in this material world that can compete. Even if someone offered you Madhavashraya Das, we'd like to offer you the post of Brahma. That would even attract you. Because there's nothing more attractive than Krishna's name. One who has Namaruchi can't be attracted to anything in this material world. So you just have to follow all the steps described by Rupa Goswami, which is in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. That's 1-4, what is it? I think it's 1-4-15 and 16. Anywhere, it's there in the first part of the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. And Prabhupada quotes in his book, Sadhav Shraddha Tata Sadhu. So if you go through that process, then you'll definitely be able to keep your consciousness 24 hours a day fixed in bhakti. And of course, from there, then you progress further. That's just one step. Then once you get that taste for the name and you lose your taste for everything in this material world, what is the next step? You come completely attached to Krishna. Because there's no, how you can be attached to anything in this material world once you have Namaruchi? You automatically are detached from everything in this material world. You don't even strive for detachment. You're automatically detached. You become completely attached to Krishna. And that's the limit of sadhana bhakti. And then there's Raganuga, which is even higher. Now you've hit the top end of the sadhana bhakti ladder. The next step is Raganuga, where you develop, you have an uprising of emotion, you have a volcanic eruptions of emotions within your heart, and then you finally enter the full stage where you're having constant, direct, personal, loving exchanges with Krishna 24 hours a day. That's the prema stage. You can see Krishna, you can talk with Krishna, you're reciprocating with Krishna 24 hours, you see. Prabhupada encouraged me to come to that stage. Even when I was a young devotee, I would write Prabhupada sometimes some questions, you know. Actually, when I first joined, it was okay. Everybody in the movement was allowed to write Prabhupada when I first joined. So I had some questions from Vishnujana Swami, who had made me a devotee, and he couldn't answer the question. He said, "Why don't you write Prabhupada?" So I did, and I got a nice letter back from Prabhupada. So then they made a new policy that only the temple presidents, the GBCs, and the sannyasis should write Prabhupada, nobody else. But I really felt, sometimes I just really wanted to hear from Prabhupada directly, because I wasn't always sure if I was getting the, because Prabhupada said there's so many things, false things in ISKCON. Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that. I was sometimes wondering, is this what Prabhupada really said? I was a little skeptical. You see. So I said, I want to hear it directly from Prabhupada. So I took a chance and I wrote him again, even though it was a policy against it. Because I'd already gotten some letters, you know. I took a real gamble. I may get really chastised with this, but I really want to hear Prabhupada, what he'll say, you know. And Prabhupada wrote me a very nice letter. He said, yes, you should actually consult with the temple president of the GBC. But then he told me, he said, but if there's any urgent need, I'm always happy to hear from my beloved disciples. So I had my loophole. Prabhupada gave me the loophole. The GBC couldn't tell me you're not allowed to write because Prabhupada told me I was if I had an urgent need. I had a loophole to keep. I had my hotline with Prabhupada. Prabhupada left it open for me. He didn't cut it off. I was so grateful to Prabhupada for that, even though it wasn't easy for him to answer all these letters. He was so kind. But in that same letter, he told me this. And I never forget this instruction. He said, if you will simply serve Krishna with full sincerity of attitude 24 hours a day, then Krishna will personally come to you and he'll answer all of your questions. That's actually the prema stage. With Krishna, you can directly see Krishna and he'll directly answer your questions about everything, anything you want. Krishna will answer every question. So Prabhupada encouraged me, even as a young, wild brahmachari from Texas, he said, he encouraged me that I could attain the prema stage. So, it's something we can all do. If Prabhupada encouraged me that I could do it, then anyone can do it. I was one of the most hopeless cases in the whole movement, I think. When I joined, I don't know, I was lucky they didn't kick me out of the temple. I was pretty rough character. But Vishnujana Swami was very merciful, I can say that. So, we can all achieve the perfection of Krishna consciousness. If we will just do what Prabhupada told me, simply serve Krishna with full sincerity of attitude 24 hours a day. That's all we have to do. Always sincerely serve Krishna 24 hours a day. And then you can achieve all these perfectional stages to where the material nature doesn't disturb your mind at all. Actually, there's nothing wrong with going out to earn a livelihood, working to the office or the airport or wherever you may go. This is part of Vedic culture. You earn a livelihood according to your, as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. And you offer those results to Krishna. That is a transcendentalist, you see. You rise early, you observe Mangal Arti, you chant the holy names, you study the scriptures, and then you earn a livelihood according to your position as a Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahmana. And then that makes you a transcendental. Otherwise, you're called Mleccha. You're Mleccha. So if you can simply live a Vaishnava life and not live a Mleccha life, by rising early, following a restricted diet, taking bath, observing Mangal Arati, chanting, studying, and then go out and earn your livelihood according to your identity in the society and offer that result to Krishna. If you will do that, then you'll actually become transcendentally situated. And the material nature will lose its appeal to you and you will simply be attracted by the very nature of the transcendentalist. That will completely capture your consciousness. And there'll be no coming back. Puna janam vijate. In the time of death, you'll easily enter into the pastimes of Krishna. Or continue in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in this material world, saving the fallen souls from illusion. So any other questions? Yes, Prabhu?
I guess it wasn't with Prabhupada's knowledge that they said that they could not write him, was it? It was kind of the devotees were trying to protect him, wasn't it? But Prabhupada, he was open to...
It wasn't, was it, or was it not with Prabhupada's knowledge that they forbade the devotees to write him, except...
No, he instructed them.
Oh,
yeah? Yeah, that's right. He wanted to have some time to translate his books. He was answering so many letters. And it came from Prabhupada himself. That's why he told me the same thing, but he gave me a concession at the same time. It was from Prabhupada, yeah. Now the devotees, Prabhupada of course could be strict and lenient at the same time, and the devotees would tend to be strict without the leniency. You see, the acharya can be strict and lenient at the same time. But he that did come from Prabhupada, definitely, because he wanted that time. And that you can find it in the Vedabase where Prabhupada is saying that. He said it to me in the letter he wrote me too.
Well, I can say just a practical example about wishing a nun, which, like, I had an instance where one person he called and asked why he didn't have any taste in the chanting, so to speak. And So how would you answer somebody? Somebody asks, "Well, I'm chanting, and I don't feel like I'm not getting any benefit like that." So
someone called him and said that he didn't have any taste for chanting. When he was chanting, he didn't get any benefit. So how would you answer someone like that?
Now, I can understand you had no taste. That doesn't mean you didn't get any benefit. In other words, the doctor may give you a medicine. You say, "Doctor, this medicine tastes really bitter," but that doesn't mean it's not giving benefit. Sometimes the most bitter medicine is the most beneficial medicine. The best way to describe to such persons, it gives the example of jaundice and sugar candy. That because of our material disease, sometimes the holy name actually tastes very, very bitter to us. And the cure for jaundice is to take sugar candy, even though it tastes bitter. As you gradually become cured, the sugar candy gradually regains its original taste, sweet nature. So tell them you just have to be patient. The medicine usually doesn't taste good. Oftentimes it's bitter. So you just have to taste the medicine on the order, putting faith in the order of the spiritual master or the doctor. You have to take the medicine, and gradually, as you recover from the disease, then the holy name will become unlimitedly sweet. But you have to put faith in the process. You have to have trust and believe in the process, even though in the beginning you don't see the result. There's a mundane example of that also. There was one popular song back in the, I think it was the late 50s in the U.S. It was called The Ballad of Desert Pete. And in this song, there was some fellow wandering through the desert. He was on the verge of dying of thirst, and he came upon a well. And lo and behold, there was a glass of water there, sitting on the well. He's getting ready to drink it. But there's only one glass. There was a note on the door, on the well, that said, "Don't drink this water, but use it to prime the pump. And if you prime the pump, you get unlimited water." So he was wondering, should I drink it? He's saying, "Well, if I drink it, I'll feel good for a few minutes, but it's 100 miles more of desert. It won't make me, I won't make it across the desert anyway. I might as well just follow the sign and dump it down the well and prime the pump." And sure enough, as soon as he primed the pump, he got unlimited water to fill up all his canteens and make it across the desert. So in the beginning, the note said, the song went, "You have to prime the pump. You must have faith and believe. You must give of yourself before you're worthy to receive." So the same thing with chanting. You may not get the result immediately, but you have to make that sacrifice. You have to have faith in the process. You have to give of yourself. You have to give your devotion to Krishna in the form of his name. And even though it doesn't seem that there's any result, but I guarantee you, if he will stick with the process according to the instructions of Prabhupada and those who are representing Prabhupada, if he will stick with that process, he'll get an unlimited reservoir of pleasure in due course. He has to have faith and he has to follow him. Okay? Yeah?
If someone is reluctant to accept the regular principles, and we know that if you not eradicate your sinful activities, you cannot be fixed and you cannot be determined, as Krishna says. So would it be wise not to mention at all the four regular principles, as you say, just chant the holy names, just stick to the holy names, without even mentioning the four?
I caught about half.
Somebody is reluctant to accept the four regular principles. We know that's the problem.
If we know that someone is reluctant to accept the four regulative principles, we know that is the problem.
We understand that if you don't follow the four regs, then you will not really get into the chanting. If you're not following the four regular principles, the names will not be pure.
If you're not following the four regulative principles, the chanting will not be pure enough.
No,
that's right. If you're trying to light a fire and you're pouring water on it at the same time, how fast do you think your fire is going to ignite?
So if somebody's not willing to hear, he doesn't want to accept us. mention the four eight principles, but just stress what you're saying, like just chant the holy name, stick with it.
So if someone do not want to accept the four regulative principles, so should we then just not tell them and stress that he should chant instead?
Yeah, if he doesn't want to hear it.
If he does not want to hear it, he does not accept it.
Well, you can tell him you're pouring water on the fire while you're trying to light it, so you don't expect to have to be able to get a blazing fire very quickly. If you're pouring, breaking the other principles is pouring water on the fire. You're trying to light the fire of love of God within your heart by chanting, but you're pouring water on the fire at the same time by illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling. So you're going to get some benefit by chanting, but you're counteracting that benefit by breaking the principle. And if they don't want to hear it, you should tell them, no, I'm sorry, I need to tell you this. A little kid's flying a kite on the roof of the house. He's having a great time flying the kite. He's about ready to step off the edge of the roof. He doesn't want somebody to yell at him. He's going to, pop his little, I'm enjoying my flight kite reverie. But you have to do that. He's about ready to step off the edge of the house and kill himself. You have to interrupt his little kite flying pastime with the bad news that he's got to stop right now as he's about ready to fall off the edge of the house. So we sometimes just have to do the needful and tell people, this is really, you're hurting yourself by these things. I know you don't want to hear this, but it's my duty to tell you that if you engage in these activities, you're hurting your ability to advance spiritually. And you're not going to get the full taste of the name by engaging in these activities. You have to be strong. You have to take a leadership role. Devotee means leader. We are meant to lead the whole world. So we have to learn how to lead these people, take a leadership, sincerely, intelligently lead them. We have to learn how to do them. Okay?
Then what if this devotee says then this is not for me if we give him?
Actually, it is for you, sir, but you just don't realize it. I'm just doing a role play now, as if you were that person. I would just tell him, you're saying, well, it's not for me then. Actually, it is for you. You just have to come to a higher level of who you actually are. Right now, you're living in a false conception of the self. You're too much identifying with the temporary senses, but you're only coverings of the actual self. And that's why you're having a difficulty in these regulated principles. You continue to identify with your senses, but actually you're not your senses. This body is constantly changing at every minute. The old blood corpuscles are dying and new blood corpuscles are taking their place at every second. The body is just a flow of chemicals around the Atma. It's a constant flow. It never remains the same. That little tiny Atma, which is sometimes described as around 2 angstroms in size, that little tiny Atma, that was the Sariputta Prabhu, calculated, according to an electron microscope, what would be the size of the tip of the hair. And he estimated about 2 angstroms. And he asked Prabhupada, is that correct? And Prabhupada said, yes. So we calculate about 2 angstrom, which is a very tiny subatomic size, you see, 2 angstroms. So you have all this huge amount of material energy, which is you could say, gravitating or sticking around that little tiny Atma. But it's constantly flowing. At every moment, the chemicals are, there's that little, cluster is the word, there's a cluster of matter around the Atma, and it's constantly, it's flowing out, and new matter is flowing in and flowing out of that cluster. So that cluster is not you, it's just something which is clustering around you. So why are you identifying with a constantly flowing, constantly in flux cluster, which is not really you? You see, that's a mistake. Because you're misidentifying with that cluster of matter, which is, you know, clustering around your actual self. You're thinking that your needs are the needs of those senses are actually your needs. But they're not. Your need is what is actually to become reconnected with the original source of your existence. You actually are an emanation from the Supreme. You are meant to be a participant in His divine bliss, you see. Because you are disconnected from that Supreme, now you're trying to find bliss in His inferior energy. But it doesn't exist to you. So we're trying to help you to get back to your original position of participating in the unlimited divine bliss of the Supreme. But you have to understand you're addicted to false things which have nothing to do with you. It takes time to overcome an addiction. If you want to remain fixed in your addiction, how can we help you? The addict says, I'm addicted, and I want to give it over, but I want to keep doing it. I have an alcohol addiction. I'd like to give it up, but let me keep drinking alcohol at the same time I give up my addiction. Is it possible? No. If you want to give up your connection with those things which are causing you misery, you have to be willing to do make a sacrifice. If you're not willing to sacrifice anything, it's like saying, I'd like to earn a living, but I want to go to work. I like the income. You go down to apply for a job. I like this. 100,000 kroners a year looks like a pretty good job, but I don't want to work. Just give me the money. You see, that's the position of your associate. He wants the result, 100,000 kroners a year, but I have to work 16 hours a day? No, I just don't want. Just give me the money and let me stay at home. Can you do that? Can you get the result without doing the sacrifice? No. You want the result, the eternal knowledge and bliss, then you have to do the sacrifice. You want the 100,000 kroners? You have to go to work. Put in your hours. Give your heart and soul to that job, you see. So if you want the result of eternal knowledge and bliss, you have to give your heart and soul to the process of qualifying yourself. Don't expect to get the result without doing the sacrifice. That's very naive. Don't be naive, sir. Don't be a naive little child thinking you can have 100,000 kroners a year without having to report to work. Okay? That's what I would tell them. Just talk to man. Bring them down to reality. They're living in this little false world. You know, they can get samadhi without having to pay for it. Instant samadhi by taking some LSD or something like that. You see? No. Prabhupada said, first comes work, then samadhi. You want something good, you have to work for it. A college degree, you have to work very hard. This is more valuable than any college degree. You have to work for it. You have to do some tapa, some austerity. Then you can get the supreme benefit. Anything else? It looks like everybody, the question well has run dry now. No more questions. One more question, okay?
He and his godbrother was advised when they came to this country, don't stay in the temple. And now he realizes that when you stay in the temple, you commit offenses. And
when somebody asked me if they wanted to move in, but then rent a room, not as a brahmachari. So then I advised, in parampara, I got advice.
So when someone asks him about this, he gave the same advice. Someone wanted to move into the temple and rent a room. He gave the same advice.
So is it okay, or I mean, like,
is this
well,
okay?
There's an arrangement. You can either be a non-paid brahmachari resident, or you can pay in fact it's halfway position. So but his question is, how is it okay to advise people to take a halfway position? Is that the question?
No, he says that he advised that person
to do a halfway thing, to move in as a tenant. Don't take a room in the temple at all? Well, it depends on the individual. If somebody's addicted to sinful activities, then that would be good advice. Someone who's not able to give up smoking cigarettes, it depends on the individual. To say if you advise a person correctly, we'd have to see exactly his mentality, because there's no such thing as one standard advice we give to everybody. It's according to time, place, and circumstance. So if you advise a person correctly or not, we have to see the person, and then we would know. We can't say without meeting the person himself. You may have given good advice, you may have given bad advice. It depends on the person. Some people, we definitely tell them, don't move into the temple. It depends on the individual.
But if someone wants to move in the temple as a tenant and don't raise for the programs, then what is the point?
The best thing is to have people move in as... Of course, I think they have some program for raising revenue by renting. I don't know it's a managerial question. Not a philosophical one.
They must wait. Even if they pay and use the ashram at a cheaper rent, they should wait.
There has to be some rules. There should be some rules for everyone, even paid tenants. You're expected to do this for getting such a good rent. It's a good rate. You're expected to do this.
Just like in India, they have a base program where the students pay the cheaper rent and stay and they attend the
Very program. Good example. In India, we have a program called, it's really beautiful. You should see this program in operation. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was in so much awe, my jaw was practically hanging down to see what they were doing there. They would get by one university, a wealthy devotee donated a house, a whole building. In one place, he donated a building. We went to one base. It's called Bhaktivedanta Academy of Cultural Education, BACE, base. They call them base centers. And in Bombay, they have maybe 10 of them. By every major university, they have a base. In this one we went to, the devotee had donated the building. It was like a four-story building with so many rooms, a kitchen, temple room. They had a computer room for all this. It was an amazing facility. So a student going to the university, you can pay a very, very low, very good fee to get room and board at a base. But along with that, he has to do all these required to go to this program, to that program. And all these men, they pay money to become trained to become devotees. It's great. It's a fantastic program. They actually pay money to become a devotee. I'm going to pay money to be trained how to become a devotee. And they do. They come out as devotees. They pay money and they become trained to become devotees. And one of the sweetest places to go and give lectures. These men are... We went to... one year we did a whole series of base programs. One devotee from... Chalpati, he arranged a whole series of base lectures for me, every day a different base. And it was so amazing. Every day we went to a different area of Bombay where another university was, and I gave a lecture. And all these boys, they were so full of intelligent questions, so fired up for japa, so fired up for kirtan, completely full-on devotees. And they were students who just paid money to get a nice vegetarian diet in a spiritual ashram setting while they're going to school. It's a fantastic program. So there shouldn't just be a thing where the people stay here and do whatever they want. They have to know there's certain requirements of living and to getting this super good deal on your rent. You have to agree to participate in a certain amount of programs. So, anything else? Are you satisfied now? Did I satisfy you? Okay, good. I want everybody to be satisfied. Prabhupada told me that in one letter, actually. I forget how he worded it, but he mentioned how the spiritual master has to satisfy the disciple. I know in another case, Prabhupada said that there was all these, the rule was eat as much as prasadam as you possibly can. That was the rule in the very beginning. And everyone loved that rule. But then Prabhupada started, actually, my godbrother Mapati, he was telling them, when they joined, it was eat as much as you possibly can. That was the rule. And then after a while, Prabhupada said, now you should restrict what you eat. Be a little, don't eat unlimitedly. And Mapati said, but Prabhupada, you told us that we should eat as much as we want. Now you're changing the order. Prabhupada, you didn't have any trouble following the first order. In other words, the purport is that the spiritual master says you do that. So if the spiritual master says you eat more, you eat more. If he says you eat less, you eat less. The satisfaction is to serve the spiritual master's order. That's where the satisfaction is for the disciple. So anyway, after it became a little more restricted, devotees were in anxiety. Oh my God, am I eating too much? Maybe not. Papa may not be happy with me. Maybe I'm eating too much. How much halava can I have? How many chapatis? Devotees were in anxiety. Oh no, Prabhupada will be displeased with me if I eat too much. So they would, at one time, at one temple, they were asking all these questions. How much prasadam can I eat, Srila Prabhupada? They were all worried. Oh no, I'll eat too much and Prabhupada won't be pleased with me if I eat too much. So Prabhupada, he summarized it with this. He said it is a duty of the spiritual master to satisfy his disciples. If my disciple wants more prasadam, I'm the spiritual master, it's my duty to provide it. That was Prabhupada's answer. So it's Prabhupada's kindness, So Prabhupada, it's our duty to, just as it was Prabhupada felt it was his duty to make sure all his devotees were sufficiently satisfied with prasadam, it's our duty also to make sure that our inquirers are satisfied by the answers. Everyone is fully satisfied by the answers. So they go away with a full belly, full intellect of answer. That intellect is filled up, like the belly filled up with prasadam. The intellect is filled up with nice answers that satisfy them. Okay, anything else? Yes.
My question is about a siksha guru or instruction from the spiritual master.
I've heard that. Yeah. She's loud. She's good and loud, better than the men. Go ahead.
Some spiritual masters, they are on the internet, or they somehow live close by their disciples, and some spiritual masters they don't have the internet assets, or they don't use, and sometimes we have devotees who live very far away from their spiritual master, and sometimes life changes and the services changes. So
what to do?
My question is, should I had a question, for example, to Radhanath Swami, and I heard now my friend in Italy, she tried to talk to him, and he said, everybody wants to talk to me. Is not everything in my books? And when you have this situation sometimes, should you just try to work things out with your local authorities?
So I understand the question. I try not to do that, but I make a point of being accessible to all of my disciples, because I understand how frustrating it can be, because Prabhupada made himself accessible to me. That was my personal experience. Just as I personally experienced it, even though it was a big movement and Prabhupada had thousands and thousands of disciples, still he made himself accessible to me. So I personally feel the spiritual masters, all the spiritual masters should be making themselves accessible, because Prabhupada did that. I personally feel that way. But what do you do if your spiritual master isn't doing that and he's not making himself accessible? then you have to look to the system like Prabhupada did. Well, there'd be the representatives of the spiritual master. You would ask them. So I know that Radhanath Swami has some kind of a counselor system. Do you have an assigned counselor? Are you part of that? Are you plugged in somewhere to a counselor network? Or you have someone who represents him that you can inquire from that person? Do you have such a person?
I have a counselor.
You do?
Not actually directly from given.
By?
Given of. By him, but my counselor is Narayani from Vrindavan.
Narayani?
Yes, she told me that.
Is there any counselor that. Is he set up any counselor? He's not set up anyone to be your counselor. You don't have a quote, authorized counselor from him. Yeah, that was a good thing about Prabhupada. Was he had an authorized. He had a whole system of authorized representatives. That if you had your GBC man. It was an authorized representative. Your authorized representative in your Prabhupada was your GBC and your temple president. You knew those persons by Prabhupada was his authorized representatives because Prabhupada told us them. They said, Prabhupada, what do we do? How do we know if we're pleasing you if you're not physically here? He said the GBC and temple president are there. So Prabhupada did set up a system where an individual devotees who urgently needed to could contact him directly. And if it wasn't urgent, you would go through the GBC and the temple president. So our gurus who don't make themselves, somehow or other, are not making themselves available to the disciples who have questions, there should be an information sent to all of their disciples that here's how you should get answers. The gurus should be doing that. And if they're not doing that, then it's a problem for our society if they're not doing them. And if that's the case, that you can't get an answer, there's no way you can get an answer from your spiritual master, either through him directly or through someone that he has appointed to be your authority to represent him, then you have to take help from Krishna, you have to take help from senior Vaishnavas.
Actually,
it's unfortunate that I personally feel it's very unfortunate if the spiritual masters are not giving the disciples a means of feeling or getting an authorized answer to a question.
Actually, when he accepted me as a disciple, then he told me that I cannot travel that much, more than what I do already. So I only accept disciples in the zones where I am already. So, but I accept you, but you have to come to me. So this was this question I had. In other years, I would just travel where he is. So I think that in this case, I got the instructions actually to go myself personally when I wanted to.
So now when you have a question, you have to travel to wherever he is, right? That was his personal instruction to you.
Right, so I should travel.
So that's what you have to do. You have to be a traveling Vaishnavi. To get the answers from the spiritual master. He told you to do that, that's what you have to do. He gave you a means of doing it, now you have to do it. You have to save your money for your plane tickets or your whatever it takes and do it. That's what you have to do. If that's what the instruction he did give you a means then, he did make an arrangement for you, now you have to surrender to his arrangement.
Thank you.
Okay.
Most men are not qualified, or whatever. But then sometimes it can create trouble, you know, there's all this, you know, guru is my authority, and this, you know, like, I mean,
you
can sometimes feel that he's just a dog, yeah, the guru is everything, like,
sometimes the husband can feel that he's nothing because the guru is the authority.
Yeah, I mean, the guru is, of course, the authority.
Can you make it a little bit short? Because
one sentence question.
You can just say sometimes, you can be envious of this, guru, all the time.
Sometimes, as a husband, you can be envious at the relationship the wife has with the guru.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guru is the most important.
Yeah.
The husband sometimes feels.
Yes. So what's the question?
The husband feels. The question is, well, how to deal with the envy of the guru,
So what's the question?
How to get rid of the envy.
If I'm envious that my wife is more surrendered to her guru than she is to me, so how can I get over the envy? You have to become a transparent representative of the guru, and then you will get the same surrender. Why be envious? Just be a transparent representative of her spiritual master, and then you will get the same exact surrender. You understand? Yeah. That means the guru is representing Krishna better than you are. So she's giving more surrender to him than she is to you. But if you can represent the spirit Krishna as well as the spiritual master can, then she'll surrender also to you, because you and the spiritual master will become non-different. Spiritually not in the Mayavadi sense, but in the Vaishnava sense. You'll become non-different from her spiritual master if you can represent Krishna as the spiritual master is representing Krishna. There's nothing to stop you from doing that, except for lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. So therefore you have to chant really good rounds and pray for pure bhakti. And then you can represent represent Krishna just like her spiritual master can, and you'll be, his instructions will be non-different from his. And she'll respect you equally with the spiritual master. But still, the spiritual master, we have that honor that you won't have, because that's his position. But you won't be envious of that anymore. Any other questions? Actually, there's no difficulties in Krishna consciousness. You know them? We just imagine these difficulties. There's nothing difficult about this process. Nothing at all. Prabhupada said, you cannot find any point that you can say, Swamiji, this point is troublesome. He said, no. It is simply, he said, there is no trouble at all. It is simply recreation. So there's nothing troublesome. You're finding something troublesome about this process, that is your mental concoction. That's all. So stop being a mental speculator. That's the real solution for all problems. Don't stop being a mental speculator. Jai. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.